your legal case?
Well, they could call Daryl ICE's office and tell him to drop the charges. But more important is that we keep the pressure on these members of Congress. We keep interrupting them in their town halls. If we find out where they're going to dinner locally on their weekends home, finding them there, they should have no rest if they continue to support the genocide.
Medea, thank you so much for the work you do and for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
My guest has been Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, longtime social justice activist, joining us from Washington, D.C. She was recently arrested outside Representative Daryl Issa's office in D.C. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host and executive producer of Rising Up with Sonali, an independently produced, subscriber-supported program nationally syndicated to radio stations, free speech TV, and podcast platforms.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. That's kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online voting is open now through the annual meeting at kboo.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's KBOO's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/board25.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the People's Urban Art Fest, empowering historically underrepresented art with a focus on social justice. This event is on September 21st at Riverfront Park in Salem and will feature live music, local artists, vendors, and community resources. More info on Facebook at LUS Salem and Instagram at LUS Youth.
This is Michael Eric Dyson when I'm in the Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco area, and I want to hear the real deal. I listen to Hard Knock Radio with my man Davey D. You heard?
It is Hard Knock Radio, Davey D, hanging out with you this afternoon. On yesterday's show, we started a conversation that was part of a series called Build and Fight, featuring Kali Nkuno from Cooperation Jackson and Sister Thandi Chamaringa from the Root Network and Black Liberation Media, KPFK, our sister station in LA. We're going to play that conversation. You can catch the entire conversation on our website, hardknockradio.org. In the meantime, we're going to turn it over and let you hear Build and Fight. We'll be right back.
Greetings. Good afternoon. My name is Tondisizwe Shimoringa. We're coming to you at the end of the month for part two of the Build and Fight series on self-defense. Like we said we were going to do, we doing what we said we're going to do. And we have had all manner of scheduling and technical difficulties. But hey, started at the bottom, now we're here, right? So we are, as I said, presenting part two of the Build and Fight series on self-defense. Kali Akuno is going to go into more depth about this issue. You know, we spent a good amount of time last time talking about how we got to the situation, to the place where we are now, and why we need self-defense. Ran out of time, so today we're going to talk about some nuts and bolts, some practicalities of self-defense. And I'm going to get to it in this second. Should be about an hour or so. All right. Y'all ready? Let's go.
Okay. Greetings, family, friends. I want to thank everybody who checked out part one of this series, the one we did some 2 weeks ago on community self-defense. I want to thank Tondi for hosting and Black Liberation Media, you know, for putting that out. And this is going to air a little bit later on in Black Liberation Media. So folks who are not catching it live now, the intent of this recording is to have it broadcast then. So I want to thank folks for participating. And we covered a lot of ground, really trying to give an analysis of the situation. And things have advanced in the last 2 weeks, and advanced for the worse, right? As Trump and his regime are kind of tightening their grip, the impact of their threats, particularly like on the D.C. mayor, is becoming more real and apparent. People are more caving in, laying the groundwork, you know, for these occupations, laying the justification for them. So today, we really just want to go through, in preparation for that, and just trying to get our communities organized. We want to go through a particular work authored by myself in 2013, called Let Your Motto Be Resistance, right? And you can find that in many places, but I would, you know, direct you to an old blog that I put up many years ago called Navigating the Storm. But you can also find it on many libraries, Anarchist Library, some of the Communist Marxist online tools. So wherever you can find it, you want to look for Let Your Motto Be Resistance, Kali Akuno, or the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. I think all of those different taglines will bring up the work. And even though that work was, you know, that was, what, some 12 years ago that was authored, facing a different set of circumstances, you know, those that give precedence to where we are now quite clearly, but a different set of circumstances. There are some parts of it which definitely need to be updated. So when you look at part one, I go back and look at part one, that analysis is trying to update it. But the core mechanics of what we're going to get into, I think fundamentally still resonate and really kind of transcend the times, at least as building blocks for what needs to be established in terms of a resistance. So just keep that in mind as you are listening. And we are still in a phase where we are establishing building blocks. So at that point, we need to be very clear. We need to build them fast. We need to build them to scale. But many of the types of formations and organizations that I'm going to describe to you and read through we know do not currently exist in most of our communities. And we have to build them. And in many cases, we're building them off of historical memory, no doubt, but we're building them fundamentally from scratch in the here and now. So keep that in mind, because I want folks to be clear, what's going to be laid out is not going to be fully sufficient to deal with the armed might of the U.S. military, and particularly this kind of domestic Gestapo force that Trump is actively constructing with ICE, his own national goon squad, basically, right? And it's going to be fully armed and equipped and militarized, so much so that the spending for it amounts to the largest spending of any such force in history. Its budget is larger than the entire Russian military budget. So just put that in mind and perspective. All right, so let's get into this. Let's get into it. Want this one to just kind of get into some practicalities. There will be some analysis, but we're going to really kind of just describe the formations and the logic and the reasoning for them and some of the mechanics of what needs to kind of go through. Now, keep in mind, as it relates to the build and fight formula and network and its construction, how it's moving, I want folks to understand that the articulation of community self-defense was and is about being able to build a force that had the capacity to defend the new institutions and the new systems that were being built and orchestrated through the build and fight formula. Right, as they became more autonomous, as they became more productive and operated outside of the normal institutions and the logic of the capitalist system, we know that was going to be attacked and will be attacked as it becomes more successful, as those things become more successful. And in review, just so folks are clear on what I mean, as our mutual aid networks really grow, build, and expand, as they help to enable more food security work leading to food sovereignty through our own organized self efforts, and those efforts to build that leading to the establishing more community land trusts, the more decommodification of land that we have to engage in order to reach the kind of production quotas that we need or the levels that we need, and how that leads to a decolonization program as that grows and expands. And then enables a greater organization of the class in and for itself to build cooperatives, to build other solidarity economy type institutions, to engage in community production on the heels of that, wherein we collectively work to attain and build our own productive capacities, industrial productive capacities, primarily utilizing the tools and techniques of digital fabrication, and then extending that out through the creation of our own social digital infrastructure, right, as a means to communicate, facilitate planning, facilitate market exchanges, meeting goods and services, making sure they get to where they need to go, and doing so on the basis of mutual trade and exchange as opposed to monetary compensation. As we build that system, we know it will be attacked. And so the original logic was drawing from this experience that you're going to hear about, and let your model be resistance and elements of that analysis. But that was the original articulation within the build and fight formula. Why include this? Because we know those systems will be attacked. Now, we're dealing with a different set of circumstances. We're dealing with, the advance of these neo-Confederates, these neo-fascists, in the guise of the Make America Great, the MAGA movement, being orchestrated, by the Trump regime, right? And its control over all the different apparatus of the U.S. settler colonial state. So that's what we're dealing with. And put that in perspective in mind when you're reading this resource, what the differences are, what the basis of the articulation are. So let me go through this. Let me add this. This is what the original work, you know, looked like. Many of you might have seen this before in the past. And again, you can access this and download it for free, Navigating Storm and several other sites. But again, this was a piece I put out when I was an organizer with the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. And it was to accompany, and just so folks can put it in context, it was to accompany. The initial piece was a piece that me and Arlene Eisen, shout out to my comrade there, we did a report in initially in 2012 that was just trying to document the nature of repression and extrajudicial killing that was taking place against new African people, Black people. And what we initially, per the research and the questions that we had interrogated, analyzed within a 24-hour period. Initially, the first round of our research demonstrated that every 36 hours, a Black man, woman, or child was killed by some extrajudicial means by the police or the sheriff or some form of a deputized repressive force, some repressive arm of the United States government. As we continue to complete that work throughout 2012 and the beginning of 2013, we noticed that the numbers were even worse, and it actually amounted to every 28 hours. So if it was a revised and more updated version that had gotten produced, because that came out after this was written, it would say a every 28 hours campaign resource, right, which we had initiated to do a broad level of education. So I want folks to put that in mind as a building block on where this work comes from and why it was articulated and produced at that time. All right, so you know, one of the first things to just really lay out was why this work, and to give a breakdown and analysis of the crisis that we are facing. Then, you know, it was the deep ascent and advance of a neoliberalism and its economic restructuring that was in deep crisis, particularly pending the great financial collapse of 2007, 2008, 2009, and how that was reorganizing the society before our very eyes, laying the foundations for where we are now. With this fascist ascent, neoliberalism leading to that as its logical conclusion, right? And so this kind of gives some analysis to that. And it's critical to note, again, where we were then, what this was being produced to address, and where we are now. And if being honest, we have to recognize that despite the broad social movements that have emerged and taken place, you know, since 2013, since this was articulated, you know, in this time period, you know, in particular, I would say I would point out two things. You know, the general movement for Black Lives, that period of mass struggle, basically from 2011, I would say really to kind of like 2017, where we saw mass protests, mainly, you know, young Black folks doing major marches, demonstrations, direct occupations, blocking traffic on highways, right, and other tactics, mass tactics to really press some demands and really pressing forward a demand, you know, that emerged from the abolitionist orientation around defunding the police. So even though we had that and some formations came out of that, we have to be honest in that we did not build sufficiently the type of institutions that this would be called for. And I think it's good to know where we're at and where we need to go and the type of work that's need to be done. So that's not put out there to be a criticism. It's just to highlight where we need, where we are, where we need to go. And these are not easy things to build. You know, having worked on and built in some form or fashion, every single thing that I'm outlining here from direct experience, it is not easy. and it will not be easy. It will be challenging, but we have to meet the moment. So there's no choice around that. So yeah, this is some analysis. I'll skip over this for now. Folks can read it. Again, more on the analysis, really just kind of breaking down how we got to this point, right? Of the genocide and ethnic cleansing that was being there, and it highlights, you know, particularly on the crisis of 2008, the rapidly changing demographics of the U.S. Continental Empire, and how that was leading to an advance in the right-wing movement, of which we see with the right kind of fully articulating now that they're, you know, the white majority feeling, or sections of the white community, I shouldn't say the white majority, feeling as if they're being threatened with a great replacement. And now you have Trump administration people directly articulating and operating off the basis that theory is true, and that to stop it, they have to deport millions of people and curtail, you know, black and brown social movement, social expanse by any means. So that's there. And this was a prelude to that. We talked about the militarization of the society as the second point, which has been ongoing. And now it's only going to intensify, the record note with how they're going to expand ICE. The downsizing, social downsizing from the financial and economic crisis. So just taking away or stripping away all the different institutions that provided various social supports, resources, and services, which we see now a complete gutting of, destroying the Department of Education, trying to destroy FEMA, destroying, you know, getting rid of Obamacare, and now, you know, really coming for, through various measures, Medicaid, Medicare, and also Social Security, right? Basically stripping that to, you know, do wealth transfers on a massive scale to the tech lords and the capitalist class. Then we talked about in there the promotion of reactionary and irrational politics. We see that completely. I'm not going to go there. And the mobilization of racial resentment and revenge. You know, we see that on full display, and this was calling that out and giving a rationality of why we needed to organize, and what we needed to organize against, and why. So I'm gonna move on. And then one of the last people was the repression and criminalization of dissent. And we see that being taken to an extreme level now, you know, so far as Stephen Miller laying the groundwork as we speak to try to criminalize the Democratic Party itself, right? And laying the groundwork for saying that it is an instrument of terrorism, right? And that those states and municipalities and cities that refuse to comply with their anti-DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion programs, to make sure that those are stripped and eliminated, and those that refuse to stop engaging in their sanctuary city practices, they're going to be, you know, he's trying to set the groundwork to have them noted as terrorists and have you prosecuted. And that's just a way to eventually just eliminate political opposition. Let's be clear about that. So those are the first pieces that this thing, this piece really goes through. And, you know, where, you know, this was basically leading was to a point of analysis of what we were articulating, what I was trying to articulate then, that we needed to engage in building self-defense networks. And that's where we are. And there were two types of networks that we were prescribing, which I think is still the case fundamentally, right? And this would be from community to community. As myself, as a partisan, you know, as a new African partisan in the New African Independence Movement, first and foremost, trying to organize my own community, first articulated and will articulate here one of the points you see that we need to organize new African self-defense networks. And then we need to work on a multinational, multiracial level of organized, broad people self-defense networks. And these two need to operate in lockstep. I would prescribe that analysis is still fundamentally true to this day, because, you know, different communities have to organize within their traditions, their considerations, the logic and the dynamics that exist there for them to be strong and to draw on the resources. You know, so the Chicano community, the Mexicano community, the Puerto Rican community, Palestinian, Arab, Asian, Southeast Asian, all those different folks need to organize, and then we need to come together, you know, on a broad basis to work in collaboration, to share and exchange techniques, analysis, resources, methodology, because believe me, there are a lot of things that different communities can teach each other. One of the things that Black folks can really bring to this equation is a deep understanding of how the logic of white supremacy operates here and what to expect of its irrationality, right? And how they move historically and have moved historically and some of what to expect. And we have, I would say, all of us have a lot to learn from migrant communities about how you survive under intense repression and surveillance in the here and now, because that is what people have been doing basically every day since they arrived here, right? Trying to make a way out of no way. So there's things that we need to learn, you know, that's including how to deal with communications, how to deal with movement, how to evade the various surveillance techniques and the new facial recognition and all the cameras. All those different things need to be studied and exchanged with each other in this period going forward, because all those things are increasing, particularly now with Palantir, which is run by Peter Thiel, as that's taking over of all the communications of the federal government, getting all of our personal data and integrating that with real-time tools and metrics to do everything from facial recognition to biometric pieces. So study that. We don't have time to get into all that, but folks need to be aware. And then, you know, what this piece did try to do was just give an analysis of what these two networks in a general sense were comprised. I'll read some of that so folks are clear. So these New African Self-Defense Alliances, as a note, are networks, excuse me, are alliances, coalitions, or united fronts of New African organizations whose purpose is to defend the New African community from external, i.e. the police, FBI, that would include ICE, white terrorist organizations, etc., and internal oriented threats, agent infiltration, intercommunal violence, etc., as threats to its safety and security, right? And then for the people's self-defense networks, again, these are multinational, multi-ethnic, multiracial alliances, coalitions or united fronts whose purpose is to defend their communities against mutual enemies, which we have, you know, a complete number of those, and threats, and advance a common agenda based on shared interests, hopes, and aspirations, right? And, you know, going to defining what the external threats are, what the internal threats are, the nature of intercommunal violence, of which we have to really highlight, was what was not highlighted there, and which was a shortcoming of something we have to acknowledge and note, is since this was written, there's been greater attacks on body autonomy and body sovereignty. We have to make sure consciously and intentionally and deliberately we are organizing in that way to protect women, to protect queer folks, and to protect trans folks in particular, and make sure that they are inside and central to our operation and bringing their knowledge, skill, expertise, and perspective to this organizing work and what we build. And again, drawing the lessons of how, I would say in particular, trans folks have been forced to organize under the more intense repression and threats that they've been targeted with since the first Trump administration. So a lot to be drawn there. I would encourage everybody looking at this to kind of reach out to folks, you know, from those communities and to pick their brains about how they're operating, some of what they're thinking and planning. All right, so from there, I want to get into more. Well, let me highlight one point, because, you know, this was again laying the foundation, and what was clear. And this is why I want to highlight it. What was clear was that in order to do this, we had to build our own independent organizations. And as I was noting, a few things, you know, came, organizations emerged during that time period. I can, you know, they're on our side of the equation. Of course, you had the Black Lives Matter, with Black Lives not a grassroots now. You had the Movement for Black Lives. You had a number of different forces that emerged more locally. You know, our folks out in Florida who done immigrant rights work, community organizing, a plethora of different things, you know, have emerged. So it's not like no new independent organizations were built, but we need to build them to scale, starting on a local level, far more. And we need to kind of take the plethora of kind of mutual aid and their loose assortment, if you would, of organization, concretize that in order to meet this particular threat and do the level of coordination that's needed. And if we have to operate from that perspective, and I think it can be an alliance at various points in time with forces like, you know, the Democratic Party, but recognize their limitations, which are on full display now in New York City with the attack against the Mamdani campaign and the brother up in, I think it's in Minneapolis, who they retract their endorsement, just highlighting the need for the left to have its own independent organizations and to be operating from that space. And within that, from that, we have to build alliance, coalition, or fronts. And those can work with anybody and everybody who will respect certain principles, and then with that, we just have to build a broader basket. So that's what this particular piece goes over and lays the groundwork. These are kind of some of the preconditions that we really need. I want folks to understand before getting into just trying to organizing militias and things of that nature. There has to be a clear political character to what we're doing, in some direction and accountability. Otherwise, you know, we wind up, you know, building tools that could easily be used against us if they're infiltrated and redirected and controlled by reactionary forces to serve aims that would only, you know, hasten the repression clearly that the Trump regime wants to institute. And remember, from the last one, they're trying to create context and pretext to either just have all of us comply and accept their domination and rule, or to set a pretext for folks to resist, hopefully resist in an unplanned, uncoordinated manner, to then with them give them the excuse to call for martial law, which they, the MAGA movement clearly wants to enshrine and fully kind of concretize their dictatorship and cancel the elections and everything that goes with it. So keep that in mind, please, as you are thinking about kind of executing these and building these things. So, and part of this whole thing, I want to go to one of the later pages to really highlight a point. And that is really, you know, the core element of this has to be about community organizing and consciousness raising. And that needs to be really incorporated in every aspect, in every dimension of the work that we do. Political education. You know, trying to heighten, as we outline here, self-awareness, self-alliance, and then mutual aid. And that we have to do, as a core piece of this, some serious education initiatives to start. All right, so let me get to that particular component. And some of the tried and true of things that we've been doing, forces throughout the empire have been doing for a while, need to be revived and heightened on a more elevated level. And I'll go through some of those just real briefly, right? Know your rights. We touched on this the last time, and definitely want to thank David Cobb for highlighting a particular point that we have to start with, which are know what the law at present allows in your area and what it does not allow. Understanding that there's variances from state to state for how you can assemble, if you can have arms, how you have to use them, you know, can you open carry, can you not? Are long guns or rifles permitted at various demonstration everything to what type of cartridge you can use, say like in the state of California, where, you know, automatic and semi-automatic firearms are not allowed in the state of California. So you need to know, you know, what you can do, right? What you can have, what you can use, how you can varnish it. So you don't invite off the top a particular situation you're not prepared for, or your community is not prepared for, a level of direct confrontation and engagement with the repressive forces of the state. So knowing the law is critical. And then there's all now the more recent attempts to ban recording of the police and of ICE and Border Patrol, et cetera. And while it's not completely illegal, they are acting in many cases as if it is. And there are a number of different municipalities and states that have tried to set limits on, you know, how far you have to be quote unquote in a safe zone and not be obstruction or hinder their work. So know that and operate, you know, within the confines of the law to at least engage in your own immediate direct self-defense and kind of lawfare, right? Law struggle with folks to both protect and defend yourself, but also others. Because we want to extend this and build this in a way that it empowers people and brings more people into the movement, not scare them away. So we need to definitely do that. Now, with that, we want to push, I want to push in particular, you know, there's your basic kind of know your rights. That's the constitutional thing. Then there's a broader piece that we put out here, which is doing human rights workshops. And for all the limitations that we see currently on display around this international human rights framework, you don't have to look any further than Palestine to see the limitation. But they're good to know and to use, if only from a kind of a moral positional a stance, to know what your right is, the right to self-defense, the right for colonized and oppressed people to be able to fight, you know, for their self-determination. Those are things that are enshrined that we need to utilize in our movement and to educate more folks about those rights, so we're not limited in our framework, and more importantly, in our imaginations around what we can struggle for and how we can struggle, and just don't stay within the narrow legal confines and the narrow kind of moral social confines of the U.S. Constitution, because it was not designed to protect the vast majority of people that reside in this empire, and we need to be critical of that. And of course, doing security workshops and knowing the, you know, going through the basics, and security has a broad range and of meaning, and it should, you know, because there's everything from now, you know, your digital security, your kind of financial security, your accounts and organizations' accounts, be they a particularly dominant thing that exists in out there now, 501c3s, nonprofits, and 501c4 lobbying organizations, knowing how to protect them, knowing what they can and cannot do, constitute certain elements of security, knowing who is in your community and kind of what role they play is also an element of security. This helps to deal with infiltration and things of that nation, of that nature, and that joins with the next one, which is and our educational initiatives has to figure out also how to do, folks need to be trained in kind of intelligence gathering, which speaks to that, you know, knowledge that comes from community organizing, getting to know, you know, your neighbors, folks at your places of employment, folks in the broader community, who they are, what they do, what kind of role they play, what they are at present willing to engage in a broad kind of organizing effort, what resources and skills they bring to the table, how they are they willing, or how are they willing to utilize those skills and resources in a broader community effort, to what extent, to what limit. These are the questions that you have to ascertain by building these relationships and putting these things in play. That's a core element of the organizing work that's needed. Then there's the self-defense, moving on. Self-defense pieces that need to be articulated and done. And that starts with everything with just situational awareness, learning basic, you know, tools and tactics of body self-defense, martial arts, things of that nature, moving on to more things around how do you utilize certain tools, weapons for defense in particular. Knowing how to use them properly is a critical thing, so you're not a danger to yourself and definitely not a dangerous, you know, to other, particularly if you're going to be in or in units in your community that grow in advance that we'll speak to, that do anything in an armed fashion. Don't be a harm or a detriment. Get the training that's necessary to be out there utilizing that. If not, be more just prepared to engage in civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience, as well as the monitoring, the recording, to apply pressure and bring people into the fold. And then there's emergency response kind of deployment, which goes hand in hand in part with many of our mutual aid efforts. And this, you know, like some of the things that clearly I think people are beginning to do well is creating apps that let people know, you know, when the feds of any form are striped these days, because they're employing all of them, as you see, kind of hand in hand, side by side, like in D.C. and parts of L.A. so far, which is expected that to become the norm. But to alert folks, hey, you know, don't go down the street. They're over that way. And should you run into them or be kind of encased by them in their movement as they set up, you know, different stops and roadblocks and things of that nature, how to deal, how to engage, how to communicate with others so that you can rally defense, you know, be it lawyer, be it legal advisors, legal monitors, and then just community defense. Should someone be detained, to put, you know, pressure at the precinct or downtown at, you know, city hall or town hall, detention center, all those different things, be able to create lists that you can mobilize and get people engaged. These are some of the basics of folks need to be trained in through the kind of first step of doing these educational kind of initiatives to get people prepared to start building the formations. And that gets us to the second kind of component. And some of the things that we had recommended, which I would still recommend to this day, building, you know, starting on the most local level, on your block, right, in your neighborhood, building these, starting to, you know, get to know your neighbor. And you can start getting neighbors and you can start doing all those different things of kind of, hey, there was a car that none of us recognized that was outside of your house, or somebody came that we didn't recognize that knocked on your door, or, you know, went inside your house, you know, which has happened, still happens, of them picking the locks and going inside, doing whatever, right? Oftentimes just, you know, placing surveillance, you know, information or surveillance tools in your house. Kind of targeting activists and organizers and people they consider threats. But if we have our own intelligence network, because we've done the door knocking, we've gone to build relationships with our neighbors and ask them very intentionally, hey, you know, be on the lookout for certain things. This was happening. You can build that and have a level of counter intelligence and counter defense. So, you know, that's why these block committees are good in itself, you know, people. Self-defense work that comes from doing that kind of relationship building with this intentionality is necessary. Then you want to extend that out to neighborhood kind of councils and committees, city councils. You know, this is kind of a gradual buildup of skill that this is promoting. And then there's particular pieces we wanted to put out and prescribe within this piece. One of them being kind of elders councils, right? So if we can draw upon the knowledge that exists within our communities, and just speaking from a Black community perspective, you know, we still have a good number of folks who are alive now, many say in their late 70s, 80s, and even early 90s, who thankfully are still with us, that we need to draw upon their knowledge and expertise and experience of how they dealt with, you know, the extremes of, you know, the apartheid, which was practiced very openly and by law in many large parts of this empire, particularly here in the South, you know, well into the 1960s, and people had learned how to deal with that, right? To survive and overcome it. And we need to draw on that, you know, sit down with them, you know, record them, share their knowledge, wisdom, and perspective. And that doesn't mean you have to agree with that particular point with them or anything like anything I say, but use it as a tool to help get you prepared mentally, right? And to think about ways of creating new strategies to meet the moment and to meet what's coming down. Now, similar to that, we definitely need to have, as we're organizing this work formation, we need to build clear youth councils, right? And student groups. These are, we know in most of our history of radical movements, youth and students play a critical role. They will in the future, as they have. We saw, you know, the last couple of years in, as the movement in solidarity with the Palestinian struggle for national liberation has advanced. We saw the student, you know, Intifada, you know, in 2024. Things of that scale and nature are going to be just as needed now to deal with this, and we have to build it to scale. So don't, you know, deny that or miss the intentionality on building that. And that is where most of the energy and capacity is really going to come from. So put that one high up there. And then there's other particularities of formations we need to build. One we call kind of survivors or family councils. And this is really something we want to draw on building and say out in the hearing now, being in contact with the families of those who've been kind of deported or detained, again, to offer them support, to offer them some solidarity, to bring them into the fold so that they bring their knowledge, will, and energy, perspective, anger into to our midst and build unity. And then there's also, you know, people's particular things we always need to be aware of in here and now, like building women's councils to deal with specific issues there. And I would also stress, again, building on the point I was making earlier, we definitely would have to include LGBTQI folks organizing their own formations, but getting support and trans folks getting their support and knowledge. We have to build upon those. It's kind of the formation we want to draw into this broader piece that is really, you know, kind of necessary. And then some of the things that building upon that, the kind of first real level of deployment, I would say that we want to get folks to articulate would be kind of watch activities. And this would go with the utilization of either apps that are out there or networks we build with phone trees that need to be out there of really monitoring the movement of when the police, when the sheriff, when the FBI, excuse me, when ICE, when all these different institutions are moving in our locales, to be able to watch them, monitor them, track them, and beginning to see a level of this, you know, like in California, really all throughout the empire. But we need to bring these things into scale and to bring people into active participation so there's a broad knowledge. And the key here is to not allow this militarization of society to be normalized and for folks to just accept, well, you know, the armies are now driving down the street, or there's a tank that's driving down the street. Because once you accept that, once it becomes normalized, once it becomes institutionalized, the ability to fight and resistance become that much harder as it becomes more intractable. So there's an urgency to this now. While these watches needs of, you know, we call it a cop watch, you know, here in this piece, but just think of it as a broad watch. And then from there, we need to develop direct security teams. Now, what do we mean by security teams? When and where there are like these raids, we need to have some folks who are trained in all the kind of the techniques of how you defend folks, primarily, I would say, starting off very, very exclusively in nonviolent direct ways, understanding the threats, understanding the implications, and understanding that, you know, what folks for now, what's being articulated, is saying that they're doing, are stopping federal agents from kind of executing their duties or executing the law. Now, keep in mind that their first rationale was that they're going after criminals. We know that to be a bold-faced lie, because that's not searching and hunting for folks while they're working on farms or in the fields or sitting at Lowe's. Those are not criminals, you know, quote-unquote criminals off the top. So we can't fall into that logic. So we have to confront it, and we have to be very vocal and be very clear in our opposition of doing our own oppositional media, oppositional communication, and in having the security teams that are prepared for folks to, you know, deal with citations or even arrest, and for folks to kind of put their bodies on the line to defend folks, right, who are being hounded, hunted, and targeted. But that needs to be organized and coordinated, and they need to make sure in your community, if you're going to do that, all the different steps of having both the financial and the legal support to be able to do bail, particularly understanding that Trump and them are very intentionally and deliberately going after cashless bail, specifically for this reason, many others, but this reason, understanding that if they do more repression, there's going to be more resistance. And to suppress that and keep people in prison longer or detention longer, they're cutting off all those avenues. So we have to be organized to have bail funds, all those different things organized, and understand how they're being targeted, attacked, learning from Cop City and kind of what took place there, study that, figure out what they're being targeted for, not that they did anything wrong, but what they're being targeted for, and to think of ahead of time, not that it's foolproof, but think ahead of time, well, how do we defend each other? How do we protect each other, you know, by executing in these particular ways? And we don't just want to be on the defensive. I want folks to keep that in mind, like this work, you know, this let your model be resistance. Yes, it has a defensive orientation, but that is a, you know, a pushback to ultimately where we need to go to kind of not just survive this kind of fascist onslaught, but to come through at the other end with a transformed society that meets, you know, not only the basic standards of kind of human survival, but enable us to kind of reach our potential, right? Both as a people and as a species. In recognizing, you know, I think one of the critical pieces is that the status quo, why in part the fascist movement has gotten to where it is, because the status quo that the neoliberals have basically with their policies and orientation, you know, bled us dry with over the last, you know, really 50 years on the global scale, that has ran out. And it's only by force can they continue to extract and exploit in the way that they are. And so we cannot fall back on the basic, let's just return to the established kind of bourgeois law and order and the good old days of pre-Trump, as if there were any good days then for the vast majority of us. So we need to think about how do we organize, you know, to as we say, socialize production and democratize society to create what we want, you know, towards the socialist horizon in the future. That's what we're aiming to do. We have to start with the basic elements of getting organized, defending ourselves in this motion, but we want to build up that capacity to come through on the other end and have a force that can execute and transform the world. So I'm going to stop there for this part two. Unfortunately, still didn't cover everything that I would like, but as I've said, you know, there's so much depth and detail to all this that we need to go through. I hope people appreciate, you know, that, give this resource, you know, a good look. As many others look for other resources that we continue to put out primarily on social media under the Build and Fight Resources tagline to share, you know, more of these vital tools. And if folks want to, you know, in a principal way, engage in a debate or make recommendations, please do, because we are trying to win, not just trying to make a point. And it takes all of us to get to that, to get there. So, signing off. Thanks, comrades.
So that was Kali giving the part two on self-defense of the Build and Fight series. Take care. Peace.
Let us ha. Hey, hey, hey. Ho, 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 knock radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping hard knock radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Got the bags and the car right now. Tell me where you wanna link. Don't need no name on the room for the check, and they already know it's me. Show to see through the speakers, you know what type of night it's gonna be. Get what we want, then we gone. We should know by now it's every other week. You got it. Every little thing you say about me could be true, but you keep pulling me back to you. Every time I leave, babe, you come back around. No. Up in my face, couldn't see this coming. Risk in my safe place, is it all or nothing? Would you bet it all on me? Did you burn that house for me?
I do it all for you.
When I look in your eyes,
I could tell things are changing.
How could I be surprised? All the time we was just living a lie, lie, lie.
Thank you. This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO's Loud and Proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive taking place now through September.